From South Dakota Public Broadcasting, today is Friday, September 3rd. This is In the Moment. There are 433 positive COVID-19 cases in K-12 schools. Monday, the Mitchell School Board instituted a mask mandate, and Superintendent Joe Graves joins us with an update. Richard Tubols profiles a business that survived despite a time when several businesses had to close. The tech guys are here today. We'll learn why hackers like long holiday weekends and also everything we need to know about Windows 11. And Lee Strubinger brings us today's Moment in Sound with music by Friends of Cesar Romero. We're broadcasting live today from the Kirby Family Studio at SDPB in Sioux Falls. I'm Kara Hetland. You're in the moment. The news is first.
With SDPB News, I'm Kyle Ireland. A former lawmaker, businessman, and philanthropist got his birthday wish. More than 90 people turned out to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. In return, Stanford Adelstein donated 90 $100 gift cards. SDPB's Richard Tubols reports.
In partnership with Black Hills Area Community Foundation and Monument Health, 150 Johnson & Johnson vaccinations were administered at the Monument at LaCroix Hall in Rapid City. Chris Huber is the donor relations manager for the Black Hills Area Community Foundation. He says his organization sponsored the remaining 60 gift cards.
It's big, yeah. We've been very surprised. We had 60 people in line approximately when we opened the door, so it's been great to see that turnout.
The gift cards and peer pressure were incentives for Alan Mathis to get his first vaccine.
I want to fly down the road, a lot of things. I'm going to a football game. I don't want to have to wear a mask, so I got the vaccination.
And for Thomas Sanchez, an employee at the Monument, he was hesitant at first, but decided to get it over with.
Not being really sure what the outcome is of each one, because everyone that I've talked to, it's been different. I've talked to some people, it's fine, nothing happened to me. And I've talked, for my wife, she just got one and she is sick. She's really out of it. But
56% of those eligible for the vaccine in South Dakota have received it. I'm SDPB's Richard Tubols in Rapid City.
Governor Kristi Noem says she's directing lawyers in her office to review the state's abortion laws. The statement comes as the U.S. Supreme Court upholds Texas's abortion law for now. That law bans abortion after 6 weeks gestation. It's a sign the Republican governor will push for the anti-abortion legislation this coming session. Jana Farley is a spokesperson for the ACLU of South Dakota. She says the decision to get an abortion is one that's still protected under the U.S. Constitution.
The ACLU of South Dakota will continue to work to ensure that every woman can make the best decision for herself and her family about whether and when to start a family without undue political interference.
There's only one clinic in South Dakota that provides abortions. South Dakota still has one of the most restrictive abortion policies in the country. Governor Noem campaigned on the promise to sign the bill that overturns Roe v. Wade, a Supreme Court decision that protects abortion access. South Dakota legislators are figuring out how to wade through the hundreds of photos, hours of video, and more than 1,500 pages of investigative reports over the state attorney general's crash that killed a pedestrian last year. Republican Governor Kristi Noem called for Republican Attorney General Jason Roundsburg to resign both before and after he pleaded no contest to misdemeanor traffic charges in the crash. And she had the investigation file sent to Republican House Speaker Spencer Gosch to consider impeaching the state's top law enforcement official. But it might be months before the House decides whether to proceed with impeachment. The legislature doesn't reconvene until January, and Gosch said Thursday that he'll allow ample time to decide. In today's weather, we have highs in the 70s in the west and northeast, 60s in the southeast, with lows in the 50s across the board. Showers and thunderstorms expected this afternoon, otherwise widespread haze in the west. Cloudy skies to gradually become mostly sunny in the northeast, and a chance of sprinkles and otherwise cloudy skies expected in the southeast. For more news from SDPB, you can visit our website at sdpb.org/news. For listener-supported South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Kyle Ireland.
And I'm Kara Hetland. On Monday, the Mitchell Board of Education voted 5-0 to institute a mask mandate. That means everyone in the district facilities wears a mask from 7 a.m. to 4:30. Masks are also required on the buses, and the mandate went into effect on Wednesday. Joining us now to talk about the decision and the week at school is Mitchell Superintendent Joe Graves. Thanks for being with us today.
You're most welcome. Hello.
Hi. Thank you. So take me to Monday night.
Sure. Monday, we had a special board meeting. We posted it Friday, several days before. And the board got together on a special meeting to reconsider the protocols we had for a safe return to school. We had a pretty large crowd at the board meeting, and including a great many people who were opposed to any mask requirements and a good chunk of people who were in favor of them. The board passed a motion to change the protocols as they had existed, which permitted but did not require masks, to one that did require them under the provisions you just mentioned. The board then gave about an hour. The entire time wasn't used by the pro, but the anti definitely used their time. And we had a number of speakers, lots of speakers, in fact. At the end of that, the motion was considered. A number of the board members spoke briefly about what their decision had been. They voted 5-0, a unanimous vote, to have a mask mandate for the Mitchell School District starting Wednesday of this week.
And you are totally on board with this, yes?
Well, I'm superintendent of schools, so of course.
Okay. So now Mitchell has kind of been the leader in last year during the pandemic, a mask mandate as well, and bringing it back this year. So tell me the why behind it.
I think there's several things. We have a board that is very committed to the health of our kids and wants to make sure that they stay healthy. And they also want to make very sure that we stay in school. Being in school is just so important for kids. And wearing masks, it is their belief, and mine as well, that will give us the best shot at staying in school. Second, we have a very strong and progressive medical community here in Mitchell, and they have taken a stance very strongly that a mask mandate will help the situation. So wrote a letter to us last year with just a whole bunch of MDs signing off on it, including the chief medical officer here, Dr. Hillary Rockwell with Avira. And that same community said this year, look, we didn't think you're going to need to do this. So we got the first, couple weeks in school without masks, but at this point the Delta variant is surging to the south of us. We're already receiving requests for more hospital beds so that they can transfer patients up here, and the numbers are just unequivocal. It's coming, and the best thing we can do right now is to try to get ahead of it and have a mask mandate. And so I think those, the two intentions of our school board and the fact that we have a very strong medical community in favor of a mask requirement, and for good reasons, is what caused Mitchell to kind of take the lead on this.
As of today, you have 4 positive cases among students?
I'm not sure on today. I get the numbers weekly. So the last time I got the numbers were from either Monday or the previous Saturday. But, there was a little bit delayed. Yes, we had 4 positive cases.
And so are you instituting also, reporting and testing and close contact reporting as well?
What we do is we report to the to our constituents. I just have an app with about 4,000 people on it, and I report our numbers out weekly. We do confer with the Department of Health. They tell us when we have an active case. We respond to that. We send letters home to the classrooms or the activities in which those students are involved. And then we also do provide testing. So we have trying to remember the name of it, BioVax or something like that. And our nurses will provide those to students upon parental request and employees upon their own request. And that's been actually quite a popular thing because, a lot of people, they get a sniffle, they go, do I have COVID? And we can then provide a test. We're providing it too early, who knows, but we at least can provide a test and try to get ahead of that as well.
How, since Wednesday, we saw some news reports that there were protests on Wednesday for the first day of the mask mandate. How is school today?
There were protesters? we did have protesters. We did a pretty good chunk of people on Wednesday. it had fallen by about in half on Thursday, and it's fallen to a much smaller number today. I think this morning when I drove by the high school, there were about six students out there. And we totally respect their right to protest. We strongly believe, in fact, I wrote an article on this just last spring. We strongly believe that children have constitutional rights, and you know, Tinker v. Des Moines and the rest, and we want to respect that. And so we, you know, we were that. And our high school principal on the first day, he and the food service director, and they did this again yesterday. I don't know if they're doing it today again or not. Took lunches out to the kids and chatted with them. And the high school principal has been very good about, you know, making sure we keep the lines of communication open because we don't want to lose kids. We're going to lose some kids. We're going to lose some kids to homeschool and to open enrollment to other districts around us. There's no question about that because people are very committed that they do not want their children to mask. And I respect that as well. There it is. But we've kept the lines of communication open. We want the parents and those kids to know that we still consider you our kids. We're not trying to harm you in any way, shape, or form. We're not trying to violate your constitutional rights. We're just trying to make sure we can stay in school.
Joe Graves is the superintendent of the Mitchell Public Schools. The school board will review this mask mandate policy at a November 8th meeting. I want to thank you very much for taking time to being with us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
After the break, SDPB's Richard Tubols joins us with the story of how a business grew and survived during the pandemic. You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
This week on Science Friday, with the Delta variant surging, how do we send our kids to school safely?
There is pandemic fatigue, and schools aren't even implementing public health mitigation measures that we know work.
Plus, our historic love of sourdough breads.
To us humans, they provide flavor, variety, and aroma.
All on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon, beginning at 1 Central, Noon Mountain.
Program funding by Denny Menholt Toyota in Rapid City, inviting you to experience the peace of mind and more that come with driving a certified vehicle from Denny Menholt Toyota. See you at Denny Menholt Toyota in Rapid City.
I'm Julie Rose. Join me for a special Labor Day episode of Top of Mind. Americans are working more and more hours, and the pandemic virtually obliterated the line between work and home. Are we due for a new labor revolution, this time focused on working less? Plus, we'll hear about the trend of digital nomads taking remote work to extremes. It's Top of Mind.
Listen Labor Day at noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain on SDPB.
Program funding by MITGO Business. We're in the business of helping partners go up and to the right. Head in the right direction with customized business internet, phone, and TV solutions to stay in touch and in control. More at midco.com/business.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Kara Hetland. The Independent Ale House in Rapid City celebrated its 10-year anniversary recently. And while that's an accomplishment for any business, it's even more so after many businesses had to close for most of last year. SDPB's Richard Tubols joins us from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio at SDPB in Rapid City. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Kara. Nice to talk to you. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. It's nice to hear your voice. So let's talk a little bit about the Independent Ale House.
So the Ale House, is, as we like to call it, one of the only couple places in Rapid City at the time when it actually opened, it served craft beer. So the owner, Justin Hendrickson, rolled into town like at the right moment.
You know, 10 years ago was quite a bit different in Rapid City. Craft really hit, you know, we had the firehouse here. There wasn't a whole lot going on in craft, and we found this great building that we just knew had good bones. Mm-hmm. So we just started tearing it apart and building the bar that we wanted to drink at.
And, Kara, you know, around that time frame when they opened their bar, it was probably only a handful of actual craft breweries in the state. And, you know, last I counted, there's over 30 now. And the Independent Ale House, it really got people in the area interested in craft beer.
So that was really the beginning, but they're known for something else, aren't they?
Yeah, their pizza's pretty good. If you ever get a chance next time, Kara, maybe we can go have some pizza at the Ale House. But, you know, they got many accolades from there. And it's interesting because when they started, they didn't even consider serving food.
It's kind of one of those blessing in disguises is we just wanted to open up as a craft beer bar. Mm-hmm. We didn't even want to have a food program. And at the time, the city wanted more restaurants downtown. So for us to get a license, they wanted us to add food.
So yeah, craft beer has become a pretty big industry in this state, and I think it even grew so much that it helped change some of those archaic laws that existed probably since Prohibition here in this state.
So how did they fare during the pandemic?
Well, I think a lot of us in Rapid City and most South Dakotans, I believe, we're under the opinion of supporting our local businesses, you know, and I think that's really what played a big role in helping them survive.
You know, I guess some of it in the way that we got shut down by the city made it a whole lot easier than trying to have to pick and choose what employees we were going to have to let go.
Yeah.
That was my biggest thing, is how do I protect my staff through this? How do I make sure that they're all right? Because I have a really simple philosophy. I take care of my staff. My staff takes care of my customers. And my customers take care of my business.
Well, I will tell you that I have had their pizza. So tell me what's next. But I look forward to having some of their pizza with you next time I'm in Rapid City. So what's next for the Ale House, Richard?
Sounds like a plan. Well, during the pandemic, they actually got a chance to remodel and, you know, kind of scrub out the boards and put a fresh coat of paint. So, you know, I think he wants to remodel their kitchen at some point. But he's been a bit busy on your side of the state because he actually bought one of the state's first craft beer bars, which is called Monk's House of Ale downtown Sioux Falls. And he renovated and he changed the name to Monk's Ale House.
Okay. So I can get pizza here too. So you'll have to come on this side of the state. Richard Tubolz, thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our tech radio guys are with us to tell us why is a long weekend a favorite for hackers, and also what you need to know about Windows 11 tech radio coming up next. You're in the moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
The new tech economy needs minerals and metals. You know where there are a lot of them? Afghanistan.
The question is, how are we going to be able to extract these resources at an acceptable cost?
I'm Kai Rizdal, mining for metals amid the Taliban. Next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6:30 Central, 5:30 Mountain on SDPB Radio.
Program funding by Bangs McCullen Law Firm. From humble beginnings in the Dakota Territory over 130 years ago, now a full-service firm with offices in Sioux Falls and Rapid City. There for you then, here for you now. BangsMcCullen.com.
Hi, this is Steve Inskeep with NPR, here to thank sustaining members of this station. Public Radio is here for you every day, no matter what. And when you give automatically every month, you continually show that you're here for us and for this community. Thank you so much for your support.
Monthly sustaining supporters form a strong foundation for SDPB. Sustaining donations are ones SDPB can count on to fund programs you love. Thank you.
Program funding by Arts South Dakota. Arts South Dakota is offering opportunities for arts and humanities organizations to grow with federal funds from the American Rescue Plan. You can learn more at artssouthdakota.org/grants.
Science and Technology Reporting is supported by Black Hills Information Security. You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Kara Hetland, and it's time for a little bit of tech radio. Kent Osborne is with us from SDPB's online department in our studios in Vermilion. Hi, Kent.
Hello, Kara.
And Amos Aesop is the Chief Information Security Officer at Exigent Solutions in Sioux Falls. Amos, nice to talk to you.
Hey, great to be back.
Great to have you back. So let's start. Long weekend, favorite for hackers. Kent?
Well, yeah, you know, we're any time that a good chunk of the population is a little bit less vigilant is always a really good time for hackers, whether it be a weekend or a long weekend, as we're facing this weekend. So the FBI and the we've talked about CISA before, the Cybersecurity and Information Security Agency, put out a bulletin, issued a warning, and it wasn't about anything specifically. It just said, you know, when that pipeline hack happened, it was, you know, going into a holiday weekend, and when this happened, you know, it was going into the 4th of July, and when this happened, you know, they're just citing past issues. And the reason is when we're all out recreating, we're paying less attention to our infrastructure. And some of these hacks, you know, in particular, the some of the malwares and the ones that encrypt your systems are kind of slow rolling. They don't happen instantly. It takes a while for them to take over your network and give itself the privileges it needs. And then, you know, it's kind of a slow rolling hack. So it takes a while. And the longer they have to do that, the more dug in they get, and then it becomes successful. And Amos, correct me if I'm blowing any of this out of proportion, but it's just a matter of the quicker you can catch these, the better. And our guard is down a little bit when most of us are out on vacation, or, you know, we're not watching, or whatever else is going on. So did I kind of sum that up, Amos?
Yeah, that's spot on. I mean, you know, there's one thing that they can't really get past, which is that encryption, specifically when ransomware comes in and encrypts your hard drive or your network drive or whatever it happens to be attacking. That's a long process. You know, encryption still takes a lot of CPU, a lot of memory, and it takes a computer just a long time to do that. And there's no way around that. And so they are looking for times, like you mentioned, where we just are looking the other way for maybe a little longer than we normally would be, because that allows them to dig in just a little bit deeper, get farther with the encryption process. You know, if someone were to catch it early on and were to literally pull the plug or the power out, you know, they don't get very far. And that tends to be when we're watching those machines a little closer. So when we start to go out and have fun, that's when their jobs become a little bit easier and they get a little bit farther. And hopefully you've got your processes and your configurations in an order that even if somebody does try to get in, or if they do successfully get in, you're able to recover in a manner on, you know, Tuesday when you get back, that you don't have a lot of lost downtime.
Tips for what small businesses, large businesses, municipalities should do before end of day today?
Well,
or they should have been working on this last year, right?
Right. You know, one of the things that we've talked about on Tech Radio quite a bit is the 3-2-1 rule. And that's been having three copies of your data, two of which should be on different media types. So maybe on your hard drive, maybe on a tape, maybe one stored in the cloud, and then one of those should be offsite. The new phrase these days is now 3-2-1-1, and that's because of ransomware. We need to have one piece of data, one copy of your data, be what is called immutable, and that means it can't be changed and it can't be deleted, even if you are at the highest level of administration on that machine. Once a copy of data is marked as immutable, that data cannot go anywhere, on the machine. It can't be deleted. You can't get in unencrypted. You can't get in to do anything with it. And until that time expires, you give it a time like I want it to be safe for 2 weeks. And so that's the new kind of backup rule, is that 3-2-1-1, and that immutable process requires a special hardened Linux server to be able to do that immutability. But it's certainly available through a lot of cloud services, and can be done on-premise too. So that's you probably won't get that done by end of day today, but that's something when you get back on Tuesday, you should definitely be looking into, is immutable backups.
I'll give you a real-world example. Clear those help desk tickets as well. When somebody is fired from your organization or leaves, and a ticket goes through to, you know, disable somebody's access to your systems, take care of that before the holiday weekend, or take care of that right away. In May, a woman was fired from a credit union. I believe it was in New York. They're not really saying which one it was. But 2 days later, she could still remotely access the credit union's file server and deleted 21.3 gigabytes of data. Just mortgage loan applications and anti-ransomware protection, and just went in there and just kind of wiped everything out. And of course, they had backups for most of it, but they ended up spending over $10,000 to try to fix the damage. So just make sure your processes are all working well.
Well, we are getting ready for Windows 11. I thought Windows 10 was it.
No. No, Kara. No.
Oh, they're keep growing and changing. Is that it?
Well, you know, and that's a good thing. You know, I hear people all the time, and I fly drones as much as I possibly can. And every time there's a new firmware or a software patch pushed, I never update my software. I never update my firmware. It just makes things worse. And I'm like, man, I don't think you understand why they're doing this. It's a good thing that they're making improvements. They're doing bug fixes, and what's really good is when they're upfront about it. They'll tell you what, you know, the change logs. They'll tell you what they did, why they did it. You can make a determination as to why, if you want to, you know, risk the going out on a limb and doing a firmware upgrade, or, you know, is it going to make your experience worse? Did they screw it up more than it was? You know, you can make those value judgments, or this is a big thing. There's a major improvement. So I definitely want to do this. If your vendor, depending on whatever it is, you know, software, hardware, whatever, is upfront and transparent about their change logs, then that's a really good thing. And what Microsoft is doing is, you know, well, they're kind of roto-rooting. Again, Amos, if I'm really oversimplifying this, let me know. But they're going to be bringing Android functionality onto the Windows platform, and that's a good thing in some people's opinion, right?
You know, I think so. Certainly, it has to do with competition of Apple and their entire ecosystem that all works together, right? You've got the Apple phones that work with the Apple laptops, that work with even the desktops or whatever devices they happen to be all manufacturing. Microsoft didn't have great luck with their phones. They tried and tried and tried and just never really caught on. And so they're kind of adopting this. Well, Android certainly has a large following, and if you can't beat them, join them, I guess. And so now they're going to start that inclusion of being able to run Android apps on the Windows boxes. And rumor has it, I guess, that that's kind of being pushed off a little bit. It's not going to be immediately available, which makes it sound like, you know, maybe they haven't developed it as far as maybe they'd like to. But it sounds like something that's in the works. And for those of us that are Android users, I am, I hope to make use of it. We'll have to see how well it works.
So what, for those of us who use Apple products and a Windows 11, what does that mean?
If you're an Apple phone user, Apple Watch user, Apple iPad user, and you are a Windows desktop or laptop user, you'll still have the same functionalities that you do today, right? If there's any integrations that you have included, they tend to keep those as we upgrade. But some of those might age out if it's an older technology that mm-hmm. Apple had included that was integrated. But you tend not to lose those integrations as you move forward.
So then, if this is going to roll out, if Windows 11 is going to roll out in October, but not for another year, into 2022 for Android, is that going to raise the frustration, or what does that really mean? Just be patient?
They're not going to force you to get rid of the Windows 10, and they have support on that through 2025. And we really, as all technologies, if you're going to be an early adopter, you got to be willing to put up with some bugs and some frustration, because it'll be there. But you'll get access to it. I was actually surprised at how low the requirements are for such, the newest operating system, a gigahertz of processor and 4 gig of RAM. That I would have assumed it would be higher than that, but it sounds like, most modern PCs, or even PCs that are 3 or 4 or 5 years old should be able to run this. So
what I've heard is, it's such a lightweight operating system that's supposed to make everything run better, run faster. Better news for gamers and other people that, are power users. And, we'll see if it comes to fruition. But you would hope that, that things would stop being bloated and start being more efficient, and they'd finally get around to, making those improvements. So that's the hope and the dream. Kara, you mentioned what's in it for Apple people, and I want to jump topics a little bit, but I don't know if you've caught the news about Apple's App Store acquiescing to some complaints about how much they charge for 30% on purchases and things, and they're starting to let they're going to let a fraction of the apps in their app store, like the Netflixes and some of those things, actually let you go out and use the login process with the company rather than going through Apple and getting their 30%. And that's really super good news. If you've ever run into the functionality where if you have a Kindle and you want to buy a book, and you're on an Apple product, you can't. It's not, that functionality is not part of the Apple. The reason is Apple was taking 30%, and Amazon is saying, hey, our margins, we're going to lose money. So that's why right now you have to go out to the website and buy a book and then go back into your iOS device
and download it
and read it. So things are going to get better there on that side because of this, these changes that are happening to the App Store, and that's a good thing. So there's good news for Apple folks in this too.
So Amazon, Amos is looking at making its own TV.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. As the article says, because why not? They're Amazon. They do everything, and
because they can, right?
Interesting. Right. And it's going to have the user assistant built in, the Alexa component to it, and it's it's just a matter of time before how many devices in your house are going to have that smiley logo on it and are going to respond to those keywords. It's just another thing that Amazon's putting together. I'm sure it will be soon. Maybe you'll be running Windows 11 on top of an Amazon device.
Isn't there an Alexa microwave right now? So we're just adding another.
Is there? I hadn't heard of that one, but I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm telling you, I got a new stove and I had to connect it to my wireless. So I don't know what it does. I haven't figured that part out, but it's connected. I think I can start it remotely, but yeah.
The other Alexa news is they're starting to get some adaptive technology in there for the websites say, Alexa can now shout at you. Well, Alexa can now figure out if your room noise is such that she needs to raise her volume or her voice. I'm calling her to her, but, you know, but raise the volume or the voice so that you can hear it. Uh-huh. And for us that are getting hard of hearing, that's probably a really good thing. but some of that functionality is being put in, and I see that there's on the Google side of things, the Google Home side of things, with their home products, they're starting to make a lot of really qualitative upgrades. Again, here we go with the software and the firmware upgrades, but they're constantly rolling out new things that help in everyday life for us, and maybe raising the volume when they're trying to communicate is a really good thing. I think it is, but that's another interesting piece coming out of the Amazon world in this last week.
I wanted that for an alarm for my teenager to actually get out of bed.
Yeah.
Instead of me going downstairs four times and yelling, I wanted Alexa to yell for me. But yeah. So maybe
there'll be a scream function that you can
get.
You can activate.
So cars are now, there's also something that's looking at having a breathalyzer and a touch-based sensor in some cars. Could be a tool for parents, Amos?
Could be. Yeah, part of that new infrastructure bill is talking about mandating a technology to prevent drunk driving. And, you know, the question there is how intrusive does the technology in your vehicle get? And then, of course, the question comes up of, you know, what if there's a malfunction and your vehicle strands you somewhere? But the general idea is that there would be either a breath-based sensor or a touch-based sensor that you'd have to utilize before you go to start your vehicle, and then depending on how it's integrated, you're going to have, you know, either your vehicle doesn't start, or your vehicle starts but won't move, or it, you know, sends an alert to a parent or something like that. And that'll be interesting to see how far that goes. Obviously, it's not there today, and it's going to take a lot for car manufacturers to get that integrated into vehicles. But it's interesting that that's something that that infrastructure bill has a mandate for.
Amos, do you know how does that the touch thing work? Is there some sort of a secretion or a skin thing or something? Or,
you know, I'm not 100% on that. I had seen that before. I've seen strips that you can touch that sense alcohol, but I would wonder how it would be able to determine your blood alcohol content versus you were holding a drink or a can that had alcohol on it, and therefore it skewed. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, I would. But the reason I ask is, got to playing around this week with my wife's new watch, and it's a Fitbit sensor watch. It's got the same chipset on the health stuff that the Apple Watch has, but it's really interesting how it can monitor skin temperature, and if you put your palm over the bezel, the metal part of that, something about your sweat or whatever, it can figure out how you're handling stress, if you're doing a good job handling stress or not, along with all the rest of the, you know, the EKG or what, you know, all the rest of the heart monitoring and pulse and all the other things that it's keeping track of. It's starting to do more of those other little, you know, monitoring kinds of things. And I'm just wondering if there's a blood alcohol level that it could screen at some point and say, you know, maybe you're questionable, or you should maybe get, it'll call you an Uber, or it'll say, maybe it's time to, you know, call your friend and get a ride. I don't know, but it's very interesting that, that these technologies, these wearables now are getting so advanced. Beyond the timepiece and checking your pulse. I mean, my watch tells me my pulse and how many steps I did, but this seems really Neanderthal compared to what's out there today.
Yeah, and it's all capable of being done just by sitting on your wrist.
Yeah.
We have just about 2 minutes left. What else is in technology news? What do we need to look for?
Boy. You know, I think we hit the highlight for the weekend early on. We were letting, you know, Amos is 3-2-1, which, by the way, is also a way to cook ribs on your smoker on the weekend. 3-2-1, if you Google that, I swear by it. but it's also a great data backup plan, and you should definitely be looking into that. I don't know.
Do we need to, let me just ask, do at home, do we need to take precautions as well? Are we just talking businesses?
Absolutely,
for
at home. Yes. You know, if you haven't bought a router lately, if you have, chances are it's doing the firmware upgrades and doing everything you need for you automatically. If you haven't touched that router, or maybe you're using one that somebody else provides you, you really need to check in on that. There's a lot of vulnerabilities and things that need to get taken care of, because, you know, there's just constant security updates to things like that. And if we can keep your home network hygiene, you know, doing well, if we can keep you healthy on your network at home, you know, we're looking at, you know, it used to be just, you know, one or two devices. Now, if you look at your home network, there can be upwards of 20. You know, you got your oven now.
Got my oven now. Kent and Amos, I'm sorry, but we are out of time. I really want to thank you for being with us. Kent mm-hmm. Osborne, Amos Asep, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Up next, a special moment in sound featuring garage pop band Friends of Cesar Romero. This is In the Moment.
This week on Science Friday, with the Delta variant surging, how do we send our kids to school safely?
There is pandemic fatigue, and schools aren't even implementing public health mitigation measures that we know work.
Plus, our historic love of sourdough breads.
To us humans, they provide flavor, variety, and aroma.
All on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon, beginning at 1 Central, Noon Mountain.
Program funding is provided by First Dakota National Bank. First Dakota National Bank celebrates individuals and businesses with a passion to turn their dreams into South Dakota firsts. Learn more at firstdakota.com/first.
I'm Julie Rose. Join me for a special Labor Day episode of Top of Mind. Americans are working more and more hours, and the pandemic virtually obliterated the line between work and home. Are we due for a new labor revolution, this time focused on working less? Plus, we'll hear about the trend of digital nomads taking remote work to extremes. It's Top of Mind.
Listen Labor Day at noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain on SDPB.
Program funding by Denny Menholt, Rushmore Honda in Rapid City. Inviting you to experience the peace of mind and more that come with driving a certified vehicle from Denny Menholt, Rushmore Honda. See you at Denny Menholt, Rushmore Honda, Rapid City.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Garage pop band Friends of Cesar Romero loves a good challenge, and record a record with what you got is that challenge. The group is currently based in Rapid City, and the new album, War Party Favors, is a 15-track rock and roll record. It's full of catchy hooks and memorable melodies that could land on a best record list for 2021. SDPB's Lee Strubinger sits down with writer, producer, performer, and engineer Johnny Waylon Miller for this today's Moment in Sound.
All right, cool. Baby, it had to be you. When you found me, I was standing out. My love life was in an epic drought. I'm probably crazy for accepting defeat. Then your kiss swept me off my fame. There might be a million girls, but just one. With your candy lips, I feel loving through my fingertips.
Let's try this one.
We just heard Had to Be You and Tone Arms by Friends of Cesar Romero. I'm joined in the studio with Johnny Waylon Miller. Johnny, thanks for making time to come out here today.
Absolutely. Good to see you. Good to hear you.
The new album is called War Party Favors.
Correct.
2014, Gene Simmons declared rock and roll was dead. He forgot about Friends of Cesar Romero. What do you make of that statement?
You know, Gene Simmons, man, you know, I'd like to see him play the bass lines on War Party Favors. You know what I'm saying? You know, rock and roll's dead. Punk's dead. Garage rock lives in all of our hearts.
It's eternal. Garage rock is eternal.
It always is.
Yeah. A lot of people have garages these days.
Yeah. Carports, mm-hmm. garages. You know, just pick your level wherever you want to be.
Carport. There's got to be some good sound in some carports.
Yeah, carport rock. When your garage sounds too good, you just go to the carport. Take it down a level.
You get a little bit of that open air sound.
Yeah.
But you still get that containment that you want.
Yeah.
Kind of like reverb.
Yeah.
A tin reverb. You can't get that everywhere.
You can't get that in a basement. That's for sure. Unless you move your carport in your basement.
You were also in a band called The Redman, correct?
That's correct.
Punk band.
Sure.
They were punk?
I guess. We're rock and roll. We're punk rock. We're everything, man.
Punk rock.
Sure.
And you've been doing Friends of Cesar Romero for how long? How many albums?
Ten years. Nearly as many albums. Countless singles, EPs, what have you.
Where do you find all of this? There's a lot of output there. Where do you find the time and energy for this?
It lives, it's like, you have to be prolific or you'll die, or I'll die. I got to keep writing. It's like therapy. You got to get it out. You got to find a way. I've lived a lot of places and I've just always really liked working in like a guerrilla, recording environment, just whatever I have laying around just to see if I can do it. So there's that challenge. And that's always fulfilling to be like, you have GarageBand and you have just a microphone that somebody left. See if you can make a record. And that always appealed to me. And even to the point where learning a new console or learning something that you probably never worked with before, but just to be able to use it to try to make something out of it and see what happens. It's cool. It's a real challenging side that I always think is fascinating, the recording part of it.
This new record sounds amazing. I really love the way that it sounds.
Thank you. Again, back to the guerrilla style of recording. When you're just armed with a cassette 4-track and just some beaters of microphones, you really have to focus on the songs. The songs are going to be the thing that carry it. Nobody really cares what it sounds like, but they absolutely want to have a nice big chorus or a nice hook somewhere in there. And so I spend most of my time trying to get the song really good before I start recording. But on this one, because of, you know, the current world events, I really spent a lot of time on this. So thank you. I appreciate that. Oh.
Hello. Oh, yeah. Give me one second. Can you hear us, sir?
Yeah.
Oh, who is this?
This is Mayo One Arrow.
Oh, Mayo, thanks for calling in. Yeah. How did you know that? I mean, yeah, we're sitting in here with the lead singer of the Friends of Cesar Romero. Did you have a question for Mr. Miller?
Yeah, I had a question for Mr. Porcupine. I know I'm a first time caller and a long time listener.
Oh, thanks for calling.
I'm really digging on the War Party Favors, the new release by Friends of Cesar Romero. You guys are doing great. Johnny, are you ever going to get Vintage Libra back together?
Vintage Libra will not be making a return. But thank you for remembering that band. It was a good band, but it will not come back.
Mr. Maya, we really appreciate the call. Thank you so very much.
Thanks for calling in, man. You sound familiar.
I think
I know you.
Oh, cool. Right on. Thank you.
Take it easy. Bye. Next caller. Thank you.
Are the words more important than the music?
Yeah, of course. I mean, in the sense where, yeah, I think I spend more time on the words than I do the music. The music just kind of comes out and you just riff on it for, you know, years. You don't really think about it, but yeah, I write it in one setting. I rarely go back and re-edit stuff. It's always just a one and done kind of thing, because if I spend too much time looking back at it, it gets bogged down and I don't like it anymore. And then I just forfeit it and it gets lost to the ages. But if I do one fail swoop, it feels really good. And just to say I'm finished with it, and then you can move on.
Do you think there will be a time when you will either paint or sculpt?
Maybe paint. I do a lot of painting, bedrooms and like decks and stuff like that.
What about film?
Film. I think the ultimate goal is this, is like making a record's hard work. The next step is making a film, and then the final thing that you can do, in the way I see it, is writing a novel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you already have an illustrious acting career. I've seen you act in the critically acclaimed film Black Hills Milk.
And Sons of the Morning Star.
I have not seen that one yet.
Oh, yeah, you haven't.
Is that in your IMDb?
Should be.
Okay.
Someone's going to put it in there.
Yeah, okay, good. Johnny, thanks so much for coming into the studio. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Struby. I appreciate it.
This was A Moment in Sound on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Today is Bandcamp Friday, which means they will not be taking any cut of music sales. I highly recommend you go to friendsofcesarromero.bandcamp.com, where you can find every album by Friends of Cesar Romero, including the very new release, War Party Favors.
That's right.
Could you take us out with one more song, please?
Yeah.
Which one is it?
Dig It with a Spoon. It's called Mixed Signals. Here we go. Me, but I know you do. You
SDPB's Lee Strubinger with music from Friends of Cesar Romero on today's Moment in Sound. Coming up Monday, a special Labor Day episode of Top of Mind. Are we due for a new labor revolution? And what effect did the pandemic have on the working environment? And on Tuesdays in the Moment, Dr. Shankar Kura from Monument Health joins us with the latest on COVID-19. And Professor Joe Santos is with us for Morning Macro. For Chris Loffrey, Steve Zwemke, and Josh Heyer, I'm Kara Hetland. Thank you for listening.